Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vitata Pinivesho Yam Yad Guneshvarta Drig Vacha Yata Manoratas Swapnas Sarvam Aindriya Kamrisha Vitata Bhinivesho Yam Yadguneshvarta Drig Vacha Yata Manoratas Swapna Yat Sarvam Aindriyakam Risha Vitata Bhinivesho Yam Yadguneshvarta Drigvacha Yata Marorathas Swapna Sarvam Aindriyakam Risha Vitata, fruitless, abhinivesha, the conception, I am this, yat, which, guneshu, in the modes of material nature, artha, as a fact, drikvacha, the seeing and talking of, Yata, just as. Manorata, a mental concoction. Daydream. Swapna, a dream. Sarvam, everything. Aindriyakam, produced by the senses. Mrisha, false. Translation. It is fruitless to see and talk of the material modes of nature and their resultant so-called happiness and distress as if they were factual. When the mind wanders during the day and a man begins to think himself extremely important, or when he dreams at night and sees a beautiful woman enjoying with him, these are merely false dreams. Similarly, the happiness and distress caused by the material senses should be understood to be meaningless. Purport. The happiness and distress derived from the activities of the material senses are not actual happiness and distress. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita speaks of happiness that is transcendental to the material conception of life. Sukham atyantikam yadtat bhuti grahyam atindriyam. When our senses are purified of material contamination, they become atindriya, or transcendental senses. And when the transcendental senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikesha, one can derive real transcendental pleasure. Whatever distress or happiness we manufacture by mental concoction through the subtle mind has no reality, but is simply a mental concoction. One should therefore not imagine so-called happiness through mental concoction. Rather, the best course is to engage the mind in the service of the Lord, Rishikesha, and thus feel real blissful life. There is a Vedic statement, Apama, Soma, Amrita, Abhuma, Apsarobhir, Viharama. With reference to such a conception, one goes to the heavenly planets to enjoy with the young girls there and drink Soma Rasa. Such imaginary pleasure, however, has no value. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.23, Antavat tu falam te sham, yad bhavat yalpa medasa. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Even if by fruit of activity or worship of the demigods, one is elevated to the higher planetary systems for sense enjoyment, his situation is condemned in Bhagavad Gita as antavat, perishable. The happiness one enjoys in this way is like the pleasure of embracing a young woman in a dream. For some time it may be pleasing, but actually the basic principle is false. The mental concoction of happiness and distress in this material world are compared to dreams because of their falseness. Although thoughts of obtaining happiness by using the material senses have a false background and therefore have no meaning. So, here Yamaraj has now, he's made the point that the person who the queens call their husband is lying right there in front of them. So there is no separation technically because they're right there with him. Right? Now, but they'll say, no, but he doesn't speak, he doesn't respond, he doesn't answer. But Yamaraj's point is, yes, but what you called your husband isn't what's responding. It's the soul that's responding. So, because you're thinking that your husband's the body, not the soul, therefore you're lamenting. Right? Because they're thinking it's the body, because if it's the soul, then what's missing? Right? Because the interaction is based on the material platform. So, technically not a whole lot is missing. Right? Now, if there's some interaction between the soul and another soul based on Krishna consciousness, then there's something that can be said to be missing, right? Therefore, we see that the acharyas in that, then they're very anxious to be associated with other devotees, like that. So this is real association, and this is actually knowing who you're dealing with. But when we think it's the body, then we're actually an illusion, because the body actually is right there. Actually, basically, you have to make the body go away, right? You know, but the soul, that's the one that goes. So, in this is that, then it's pointing out is that the happiness that one can gain in the material world. So he's pointing out that's illusory. It's like a dream. Now we'll say no, but it's here. It's real. I'm experiencing it. But that's the point of the point of the dream. It seems real, but it's not. Because at the time a dream seems quite real. And then we wake up. So in the same way, the material world seems real. And then we wake up. Right? Because we're dealing with the secondary aspects of the Lord's creation. We're simply dealing with the forms and activities that generate results. But we're not dealing with the substance, which is actually relationship with Krishna. Because Krishna is the transcendental aspect. Right? He's the one who's the person. We're who's the person. That's who you actually have the relationship with. Right? But because we focus on Krishna's energy and instead on the energetic as the primary point of happiness, then we simply have mental concoctions that if the energy transforms in this way, then I'll call that happiness. Because if it transforms in one way, one person is happy. It transforms another way, someone else is unhappy. So the transformation simply creates different environments. We decide, that's why we say it's a mental concoction. We decide this is happiness or this is not happiness. Because the very same situation we'd call happiness, someone else would say, is not happiness. So like that is that this is the point, is that we're trying to gain something from something that only transforms. It doesn't produce anything in connection with the soul. We have to remember Krishna's happiness comes by fulfilling his desire. And then the secondary aspects of the forms and activities, those are there just to fulfill his desire. So he's thinking, if it's like this or like that, then it'll be nice. Why? Because if it's like this, we'll interact like this. If it's like that, we'll interact like that. And that's about the relationship and all that. Well, we'll look at it, even if it's interaction, it's about what we're going to get from it. It's not as much about the person and all that, if you scratch a bit. You know, I mean, we generally don't appreciate this scratching business, you know, unless it's the senses, but because then it kind of takes the, you know, how you say, wind out of the sails of, you know, happy life. But the reality is, what is actually life? That we have to know. Because if that's understood, then we look at the whole situation totally differently. It's totally different. Then it's about what is the association between the living entities. Right? Because if we want to associate based on the soul, then what's the common point? Right? We want to interact between soul to soul. What's going to be the common element? Because unless there's a common element, how do you have friendship? Right? So that has to be something that's common to all souls, and that's Krishna. So unless it's based on Krishna, so that means it's based on Krishna, based on his desire, how he likes to interact. Then based on that, we interact with the other living entities. Then we can actually have interaction with the living entities. But if it's not about the forms that Krishna likes, then it's going to be really hard to actually base it on the living entities. It's going to be based on our idea of how this secondary aspect should unfold. Because Krishna's already said, this is the secondary, this is how it unfolds. And we say, no, I want it to unfold like this. So where's the common ground between souls? There isn't any. We can talk all day that, yes, this, that, but where is it? Actually, where is it? So that's the difficulty. Is there's the commonality, the only thing the souls have between one and another is Krishna. Because even Brahman won't cut it. Right? That'll deal with how the forms work and what they produce and everything. Yes, but it won't deal with a common interest, because Brahman only establishes this is how nature works. Right? This is how the masculine feminine principle interact, but it won't define what you should be doing to gain pleasure from it. That's all. So that's why it's the impersonal position is generic. And it won't give any more than that. We connect it to Krishna, then we get more because we remember Krishna, the person. But on the Brahman platform, there isn't a whole lot there to gain. You know, way more than here, but not compared what the soul is looking for. So that's the point is that he's saying it's fruitless to see and talk of the material modes of nature. as if they will give happiness and distress. No, it's simply, I get a certain result, I say it's happiness. Like some person is mode of ignorance, they'll say they're happy. Put him in a situation of goodness, they'll say it's a distressful. Someone else, mode of goodness is happiness, like that. Just like, how do dogs or cats really like taking a bath? Right? In general, no. Right? So, if you never give them a bath, they would be quite happy. Right? But now let's take a cow. Does a cow like a bath? Yes. Now, if you didn't give a cow a bath, they would be unhappy. So, it's simply, they define that this is what they like. So, therefore, Krishna arranges the situations. But actually, the point is we're not the body, so it doesn't have anything to do with the soul. The soul is still just as pure, whether the body is bathed or not. Right? So this is the point he's trying to bring out, is that we put too much emphasis on this bodily concept, even though we'll always say we're not the body. But here, we base the relationships on the body, on the conditioning of the body. And on one, that's going to be the medium we have an exchange through. But how you engage that conditioning of the body, now that's what defines whether it's Krishna conscious or not. Whether it's on the platform of the soul or not, or whether it's just mental concoction. Right? So here is then Yamaraj is making that point, is that we have to base it actually on the relationship between the soul and the Lord. Then you have a relationship between the souls. But if you leave out the Lord, you don't technically have a relationship between the souls. Any questions or comments on this? Yes. Microphone, that thing, yes. I think you have to turn it on somewhere.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the soul was never non-existing. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord said that at the beginning of the creation, there was nothing but Himself. Can you please explain?
Okay. So the souls are always existing, and at the same time as there's nothing but Krishna. Right? So that means the souls are a part of Krishna. So Krishna is unlimited. It's just a matter of His expanding doesn't mean He's growing. It just means the manifestation of Himself is growing. But the souls are always there. So His Tathasta Shakti always exists. And so that means we're always there. It's just a matter of a particular point of manifestation. But the time frame is on eternality, so it doesn't, it's not like we can work something out GMT here, or even we want to be really technical, universal time. Right? So it's not going to function that way. Does that make sense? So the soul always exists, but the soul is part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna says there's only Him, that means there is actually only Him. And then there's manifestations of the various forms and activities of the living entities. But even that's all Him, as Yamaraj was explaining earlier, is that we say that the person is acting because of the life airs, but the life airs then aren't the actual factual point. It's the soul. But the soul isn't doing anything. It's the modes of nature, and the modes of nature are controlled by Krishna. Right? And Krishna doesn't actually get involved. He just sanctions. So the material energy carries it out. Right? So then all these activities go on because of Krishna's potency. Does this make some sense? It's just like, let's say, if the living entities are like, let's say, your finger, okay? You just say, all there is me, right? Does that mean when you say, there's only me, that there's no finger? Right? When you talk about yourself, then there's this just kind of little round blob there. And then someone goes, nice bead bag, then suddenly that manifests or something. You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the soul is always there. It's just a matter of whether there's manifestation of a form in which then they interact in the material world or not. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So, yes.
Maharaj, many times it seems that even our relationships with devotees are focused on common conditioning. So how to bring relationships more in that, focus on the more on this devotiness of devotees, on that connection to Krishna?
Okay, so even with devotees, we're focused on common conditioning, you know, instead of Krishna consciousness. The point is the common conditioning is the tools you're going to use to apply in the bigger tools of the recommended activities, which is then in support of the actual main activity, which is Krishna consciousness. Right? Because the point is there's so many ways you could serve Krishna, so you're going to be most comfortable with those who are serving the way you serve. Right? Because then you have something common to talk about. Since Krishna is the common topic, then it will be something that is common. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the conditioning isn't a problem as a basis. The problem is if that is the relationship. You know what I'm saying? That's where the problem comes in. So when we identify with it, we know there's a difference between identifying with it and knowing what it is. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Someone, let's say, who's very expert at something, or let's say has mastery over something, they understand all the elements of the tools they're working with, and they can do amazing things, whatever they think they can do. But if they identify with it, then there's a problem. Because then as they go to apply something, as the environment changes, especially if it's a change that's not necessarily favorable, then they will become affected emotionally by it. They won't look at it actually with clear vision. You know what I'm saying? So then what happens is that they don't actually deal in the best way. You know what I'm saying? Like a child deals in a certain way. You tell them something, they don't respond. Right? So now if we become angry, that's because we think I'm the one controlling the child. But how does this soul control that soul? Only Krishna does that. So this conditioning is dealing with that conditioning. So we understand the conditioning of the child, they have a tendency not to listen so great. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, you know that's what they do. So you find ways to get them to listen. Give different examples, you know, say it many times. You know, set the example yourself. You know, you have nice relationships, so they just follow what you do. You know, there's different ways. So if one's not working, you try another. So that means you're using the medium of the conditioning, but you're applying that medium of conditioning according to the standard rules given in Shastra. Because if you do that, there's a better possibility you won't identify with the conditioning. But it doesn't mean that you can't. Right? Members of the Vedic culture also had a problem of identifying with their position. But that identification is a touch more, has a little more knowledge to it than those who reject the Vedic system. Right? So in other words, you know, if you're situated in ignorance, really hard to function in goodness and pure goodness. You're situated in goodness, better chance you can function in pure goodness like that. That's why it's recommended, only because it's better tools. Just like in cooking. Let's say you want to cut some vegetables. We would recommend a sharp knife. But, you know, people will say, no, but, I've always had dull knives. My mother always used dull knives. Everybody in our community uses blunt knives. So why should I use a sharp knife? I can't relate to a sharp knife. It's kind of like, yeah, then look at how intelligent that statement is. You know? But it's said with panache and everything, so everyone thinks, wow, this guy is, you know, he's an individual. He really knows who he is. He's confident. I want to be like that. You know? But, you know, go down to the insane asylum. There's people who are really convinced that they're people who they're not. You know, you could take lessons from them. If that's our method. But the point is the Vedas recommend things because they work better, that's all. Because who's recommending them? People who are free from the four defects. Right? So they actually know how to deal with the material energy. Sometimes we don't give them credit. We'll say only we know. We conditioned souls know how to deal with the material energy, and the liberated souls don't know because they're not from here. So what will they know? But factually, they're the only ones that know. We're the ones that don't know. And due to illusion, like it says here, we think we're doing a great job and we think we're creating happiness and distress. I'm creating happiness, that guy's creating distress. Right? If you stop creating distress, I would be happy. You understand? So the point is you have the conditioning itself, the recommendation for applying the conditioning, but the main point is the devotional service. And if that's left out and we just discuss the technicalities and all that, we miss the point. It's like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's evaluation of whether an article was worthwhile to print or not. It was simply how many times Krishna was mentioned. So in other words, if the article was primarily about Krishna and then used the secondary medium to express it, to make it some, you know, then it was of value. But if it's very nice and technical and all that, but doesn't really get around to the Krishna consciousness because you say, oh, of course that's there and we take it for granted, then what happens? What happens if we take any relationship for granted? It doesn't work. That's the fun part. And then we think it's going to work in Krishna consciousness. What fails miserably in the material platform is going to work like a charm in the spiritual. That's called Mayavadi philosophy. Mayavadi philosophy is whatever works here, you do the opposite for there. You know, it's just that we're not used to what's Mayavad philosophy, so we get involved in it and think that we're not, because that's how, you know, growing up, that's how I was. Right? So, of course, we're not a Mayavadi, right? You understand? So that's the thing, is you have the conditioning, what's recommended, and then there's the actual recommendation, which is Krishna consciousness. So that's the primary. Then the activity that's recommended is the best way in that situation to express the devotional service, and that situation, how our conditioning is going to relate to it. So you have to take this whole line. Nowadays, we only discuss the third thing. We have seminars, you know, for days, hours, about the third, without discussing the second and, you know, rarely ever the first. We'll say it's for Krishna, but then show how that first part gets to the second and gets to the third, and what's the actual connection. It's not shown. And if you bring up, well, how does this connect, then, you know, you won't get any answers. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is we have to be very careful. If we take anything for granted, it's going to give us a problem. Right? You know, the guy's going down the highway in his nice car, it goes well, it handles well, he's leaning back, one hand on the steering wheel, enjoying himself. Now if anything goes wrong, he's dead. Why? Because he took it for granted. You're in the kitchen, you're cutting with your knife and that, you're not paying attention, you lose body parts. You know? So the whole point is, the moment you're not focused, that's the moment things go wrong. And we're professing a philosophy of non-focus. And then we're saying success in the same sentence. Yudhishthira Maharaj, who we'd have to accept, was quite successful, right? In the recent history, you would have to say he was the last actual successful person of that status, right? Emperor of the world, there was never an emperor of the world after him like that, right? And so then he said, focus, right? Endeavor and dependence on the Supreme is how you'll be successful. And if we don't follow that, there is not a snowball's chance in hell we'll be successful. And if it happens, it's just due to our karma. We can't take any credit for it. Can't write any books, can't make any seminars. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that our closer relationships or who we associate with on a more regular basis are going to be those with similar conditioning. But more important is there's similar value in recommended activities. And then even more important than that is the commonality in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, you can have people that have different conditioning but have the same value in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, everyone's together. You know, just like this room here. There's a good chance if whoever's in this room was not a devotee, there's a good chance that you might not find anybody in this room as friends with anybody else in this room. Maybe one or two as acquaintances. But in reality, probably not close at all. But you bring in Krishna consciousness, the primary, then everybody's together. Right? And so now, so then it just comes down to then the commonality of value in Krishna consciousness and following recommended activities or not. And then how you're going to engage your conditioning. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, when we're doing activities like this, community is there. But when this class is over and everyone walks out that door below those windows, that's where the commonality stops, other than their devotees in Mayapur. You know what I'm saying? Because the values and how they apply themselves, what's recommended, how they identify themselves with the conditioning, that's what's not going to make the difference. Then we'll walk out the door and go back to our two or three or four friends that we have in out of 5,000 here in Mayapur. You know? And that's doing pretty good. You have friends. You know what I'm saying? So one has to understand what one's dealing with. It's a science. There's not a sentiment. People say, oh, all this, you know, according to Shah, that's all sentiment. And we're the scientists because we follow the modern. It's actually, that's the mode of ignorance. It's the opposite, the other way around. Those who don't follow the Shastra, they are working on sentiment. They may be a little dry and hard by the modern context. If you're cool and mean and tough, then you're supposedly not sentimental. But they're more self-centered sentimental, that's all. And people who have more feelings than that, they're a little broader-minded sentimental. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. Is that okay? Something else? Yes.
Thank you for the class. Since it's very difficult for many of us to elevate from the modes of ignorance and passion to the modes of goodness, I was wondering if you had any insight on, you know, maybe some friction that might be felt elevating from the modes of goodness to nirgun, and also maybe if you had any information on if from the lower modes one can also attain nirgun without rising to the modes of goodness.
Right. See, the main point is that the soul's not actually part of the material energy and not part of the modes. Therefore, if you function on the platform of the soul, meaning that I am servant of Krishna, I render service to Krishna, that will already place you on the liberated platform. Whether we have this associated with our conditioned, identification, that's another thing, but we're actually functioning on the liberated platform. So anybody who has developed that faith in Krishna, they're liberated. Technically, anyone who's chanted once the holy name is. Right? But the point is now it's a matter of bringing your position and your consciousness into the same place. So by starting with the top, because we don't have the qualification to move from the bottom up, right? And it's not that efficient anyway. They can do it in Satyayuga, but how long does it take them, right? 60,000 years in meditation, doing nothing, stopping the breathing. The white ants come and eat the flesh off your bones, you know, and you're just sitting there as a skeleton doing meditation, right? I mean, go down well in Goth circles, but other than that, might not go down so well, right? So, therefore, you have to start from the top down, which is the recommended and the quick path. So you start from Krishna. You know, Krishna is there. He's the Supreme. I'm His servant. I want to render service to Him to please Him. How to do that? These are recommended activities. So I can render the recommended activities. That will please Krishna if it's done in that mood of devotion in the first position. Right? So I take from the second position there. But how do I decide on which second position? That depends on the third position of my conditioning. So according to my conditioning, I should be engaged in these activities, secondary activities in the second position for serving the primary position of devotion to Krishna. Right? So the secondary position has two aspects. What is the generic rules and what is my nature and where do they fit into the rules? But the primary is one thing only, bhakti. Right? So that's why there's a commonality amongst all devotees, because they have that one commonality of bhakti. And there's the one commonality of this is the set of rules. Now where someone situates themselves, that's the uniqueness of the particular individual. Therefore, the Varnashram is the widest range because everybody can fit together. All devotees can fit together. In fact, only devotees can really use the Varnashram system to advantage. Others use it, keep themselves in the material world. Devotees use it, get themselves out of here and go back to Godhead. You understand? So it's by performing devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, in the association of devotees, that's what will get you to the transcendental platform. Does that make sense? Okay. We have in the back. Yes. No, all the way in the back.
Like you said, happiness is derived from pleasing Krishna. And what we
derive from?
Pleasing Krishna, by serving
yes.
Krishna.
Yes.
And we are perceiving happiness from mere the transformation of energy.
Right.
But elsewhere in Shastra, it says that your happiness and distress is already predestined. Like you will get some happiness, some distress.
Yes.
So that means there is something happening. It may not be actual happiness, but something is happening that we are perceiving as happiness.
No, we're not saying it's not there that you're perceiving it, but that you call that happiness. That's what we're saying is the... is the illusion.
So what is happening actually? Like, who is perceiving it?
Because what's happening means the body is interacting with other bodies based on the subtle body. So in other words, material energy is interacting with material energy, controlled by the material energy itself, sanctioned by the Lord, and we're sitting there going along for the ride. Right?
So
you understand? Like, you get on a bus, right? And you get on the bus that's going to Piccadilly Circus, okay? Now that you start seeing streets and buildings near Piccadilly Circus, now we're going to say, see, I'm doing this. I have brought myself to Piccadilly Circus, but did we actually? No. The bus is doing everything. So the transformation, the environment, everything, the bus, the environment around, all we're doing is going along for the ride. But we identify that I'm doing this. But all we did is that we desired, okay, I'll get on this bus. You could have gotten on another bus, you know, and ended up out in Flatbush. You know what I'm saying? So, but you didn't.
Okay.
Some did.
So, Maharaj, one small addition to this question. Like, is soul perceiving whatever is happening? Is soul is perceiving or the mind or ego? Who is perceiving it?
The soul is perceiving, but through the mind and senses. The soul is perceiving it, but through the mind and senses. The problem is the soul identifies with it, rather than it's just something I see. Right? There's so many houses, you say that's a house, and then you say this house is my house. But it's just another house. But we identify with that house, so that's not my house. You understand? And then as we're going down the street, we're going, wow, I like that at that house, and I like this at this house, and I like that at that house. In our mind, we're putting together what kind of house we'd like to have. And so that's what then's created in your future lives. So it's not that the material world doesn't exist. What's the illusion is what we think it is. It's a machine that's functioning according to our desires based on our previous desires based on the Lord's sanction. That's all. And so it's just happening. Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? Last, okay. Last question. Yes. Here, let's wait for this mic thingy majiggy.
Hare Krishna. This is Hiranyakashipu speaking perfect philosophy,
yes.
But since it is he speaking, so it's not appealing to me. You know, I'm like,
it's not appealing to you. So only if the gopis are there, rolling on the ground, beating their chests and pulling out their hair, then you find it's good. Some response?
Yeah, that is appealing to me. Yeah.
Okay, but the point is that's appealing to your conditioning. Because this is called the Paramahamsa Samhita. So that means from verse 1 in the first canto to the last verse in the 12th canto, Paramahamsas appreciate every verse. And if you only appreciate certain verses, that's due to your conditioning. That's not due to your advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because rasa is rasa. You can appreciate it anywhere. And you're making the very bad mistake, because the words that we're discussing right now are spoken by Yamaraj, who's a Mahabhagavat. And to say that it's just Hiranyakashipu and we're not really cool with Hiranyakashipu, especially since there, you know, he's Jai of Jai and Vijai, so the personal associates of the Lord, then you're actually a long way from devotional service, don't mind me saying. In actuality. Because the reality is, you know, all these things, these are very, very important things for us. Because that may be appealing on one sense, but in reality, do you ever think that there's some happiness and distress based on your desires? Do you ever daydream about things? Do you ever have dreams at night? What do you dream about? You understand? So these things are for us. That's why they're here. Paramahamsas don't talk about stuff that's not of value, that's not transcendental. So the point is everyone appreciates the gopis, but why? Just because it's girls and they got big boobs or what? What's the reason? You know what I'm saying? The reality is that the rasa, their full surrender to Krishna, that's the thing that is there. That's what Bhishma Dev picks up on. He's on the battlefield on a bed of arrows speaking to Kshatriyas. And he's, of anybody there, he's the most Kshatriya of Kshatriyas. He's the most manly of all the men there, right? The only one to compete with him is Arjuna, and he's junior. You understand? And so he's talking about the gopis. Uddhava, who's totally into, you know, serving the Lord in majesty, is talking about the gopis. So is it about the pastime or is it about their surrender? So when we talk about Braja Bhakti, we're not talking about that it's a whole bunch of ladies there. We're talking about the surrender of these people. And if you don't catch that, you will not get into Braj. Or even if you do, you'll be sitting around making cow dung patties and you won't go to the rasa dance. Because it's only about doing stuff that they do, rather than having the mood. Varna dasa, the first stage of bhava, is about the mood of the brajabhasis. When you catch that, the surrender, that's the first point. Then the second point, Shravana Dasa. Then Varna Dasa, the second point, that's about adjusting to your specific relationship with Krishna. So if you want to jump to that without the first one, then technically that doesn't have any basis. In its mild form, it's a misunderstanding. In extreme form, then we'll, just like we use Mayavad on one side earlier, Sahaja is on the other. So you have to be careful of that. The middle is a razor's edge, and the two sides are really wide. So you have to be very, very careful. Otherwise, you're going to be really, really unhappy. Because most temples, very rare you find somebody, temples on 10th canto. And many temples just only do what Prabhupada wrote, so you hit 13th chapter, is it? And then that's it. Then they reset back to one. So you're really going to be miserable. But if you learn rasa, then that's the taste. The Lord, His devotees. And that's a rasika. Rasika means someone who understands rasa, not someone who's specifically interested in a particular rasa. That's not a rasik. You know what I'm saying? You know, let's say we have a connoisseur of food, but he'll only eat one thing, one particular preparation. No other preparations. Can we really call him a connoisseur? No. Connoisseur means he appreciates fine cooking. It doesn't matter what it is. He may have some preferences, but he can appreciate any cooking. Doesn't matter what the cuisine, whether it's simple or whether it's fancy. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's real rasik. So then, but the point is you don't have to worry about it. You're continuing chanting, you're continuing associating devotees, doing your service under the direction of the spiritual master. The heart will get purified and you will develop the taste. So you don't have to worry. If it's not there, it just means it's just another one of our unlimited anartas that we have to, you know, deal with. So in other words, don't get an anxiety. Just don't put any emphasis on it or focus. You know, just like if we're having dreams about beautiful women at night, then don't put any emphasis there. You know, keep chanting, it'll go away. You know, is that, what was that one devotee said, when I chant, then there's this, what was it, this light and there's this buzzing or something, and Prabhupada says, no, just keep chanting, it'll go away. They were thinking, oh, this is great realization or something, you know. You know, hippies, you know. You understand? So don't worry about it. But all we're doing is speaking strongly because it can lead you down a really wrong path. But it's there. Don't worry about it. Is that okay? Okay. So end here. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki. Jainatai Gauru Premanandi.